Hey everyone, welcome to the Worship Artistry Podcast. My name is Jason Houtsma.
My name is Daniel Ornelas.
And you're listening to us on iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play or wherever you get your podcasts. And we have quite a podcast for you today.
But Talk to me about it. Okay. What are you going to do?
Well, a number of years ago, I got to sit down with the one and only Jason Ingram. And he is, if you don't know who he is a co-writer on like everything. So to put it in perspective, Chris Tomlin, if you go on and look at the amount of songs that Chris Tomlin's written on, you know, it's going to be a couple hundred. Jason Ingram is on over 1,000.
Like proper cuts, like big songs.
Yeah. Like you look, especially if you look at that first front page of his songs, you're just like, oh, yep. That's on our website. Yep. That one. Yep. I mean, you just go down the list. And not only is he a great songwriter, but he is a super sweet, humble guy. And you're going to love the interview.
Awesome. I can't wait. He's actually a good buddy of mine.
Yeah, you got any good stories for me?
What are we looking for? Something like a little bit about like embarrassing about him, or just a good story about him?
What do you got?
He's impossible to embarrass. He's amazing. I'm just kidding. No, I played in One Sonic Society for a couple of events, and we went out and did like a conference with him. That band was Stu G and Paul Mabry and himself and myself. We played couple of conferences, I guess, out in California, and then I played at a worship conference here in Nashville with him. And just what you see is what you get, man. He's a super, super sweet guy. He really knows a lot. He also produced one of Brenton's records that we did. So, yeah, good guy, man.
Yeah, his production is awesome. We actually ended up talking quite a bit about songwriting. We're talking about some new projects. But really, to me, the biggest thing about this interview is just, you know, I think as a worship pastor and somebody mm-hmm. who introduces these songs into my church, I care that the people who are writing this song, that it's also coming from their heart, right? Yep. That they're not just sitting in a room hashing out as many songs as they can get. And we ended up talking quite a bit about that. And well, let's just say after this interview, I'm sure that you'll be happy to sing any one of Jason's songs.
Glory days.
You know what? This is kind of a longer interview than we normally do, so we're gonna change it up a little bit this week. We're just going to go right into his interview, and we'll just pop in real quick at the end. We're not gonna do member mail or anything because we just want to leave it all with this interview. It's fantastic. So, without further ado, Jason Ingram. Jason, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So I was just talking with Daniel, and you have written just so many songs. I mean, it seems like I look at it, and when I look at the list of songs that you've written, I you know, besides stuff that you do with One Sonic Society, you know, it's like, wow, this is kind of everything. So my initial assumption was like, okay, if you want to write a great song, you just call Jason Ingram. You say, hey, I got this idea, and then he writes all the rest of it. Is that how it generally works? Like you said, like, I want to write a song about Jesus, and then you say, okay, here is your hit song. I'll take about 5 minutes here. And how's that work?
Most of the time, it's the thing I've really, when I think about the songs I've been able to be a part of, I've been able to, really just write with so many amazing writers, and they make me look better than I am. But it's really the fruit of friendship, you know? And so a lot of these songs with friends, in like the Passion space or the Hillsong space, or these days some in the Bethel space, and wherever it is, it's usually begins as friendships and then just the outpouring of that becomes songs. And no, I wish they came in 5 minutes, but every now and then, songs do come fast, but I find writing songs for the church, to me, is the hardest song to write, more than like a radio song or a CCM song or a pop song. For me, they're, I think because you're writing a song that feels different than something else, mm-hmm. but using language that's familiar enough and a range that's accessible enough for average people to dig into and for those songs to become their own. I find that process to be really challenging, but really great. Mm-hmm. But it's not without any lack of like writing and rewriting and refining and rewriting.
So how do you manage to not repeat yourself? You know, it's like I think for myself when I sit down and I write songs, and sometimes I'm like, man, this sounds familiar. Did I steal this from someone? Oh, I stole it from myself, from like a song I wrote 6 months ago. I would think with such a large catalog, it'd be really difficult to like kind of keep, like, how do you keep it fresh?
Well, I mean, I think the key to that is the collaboration, because I do find that certain types of melodies and language is real natural for me. And then, but when I mix that up with someone else who might approach a melody or a lyric differently, then we sort of get this mashup of our ideas. And so as long as the collaborative process exists, then I think I'm still able to find new ways to say something that maybe isn't a new thing to say, but a new way to say it or express it to the Lord. And then also I do think it's amazing that the object of the person that we write for when we're writing worship songs, that we're not going to run out. He's an inexhaustible God, and so every day there's a new mercy, there's a new expression, there's a new experience of God's love, and so it is wonderful that as writers for the church, that the one to whom we write our songs, like we'll never have got to the point where we said it all, or we said enough, or we covered his goodness, and so now we don't need to sing about it anymore, you know?
Right, right.
So that's a real gift.
So how do you keep putting that then into a fresh picture, you know? It feels like throughout worship music for a long time, there's certain things that we say, there's certain things that we grab onto, right? Sometimes it's biblical, sometimes it's words that we are comfortable with. You know, I was joking around with Daniel. We were writing about something, and he goes, "Oh, we haven't used grace yet." And I was like, "Oh, is that the rule? Like, we have to use grace three times in the song, and then we can that now it can be a worship song." Okay, we said it that many times. How do you continue to show God in a new light without getting so far off the track that you're like, you know, working on this tiny little piece that you're like, well, this is a part that God has shown me. Mm-hmm. And it's so way over here that it's like, I don't really quite have words for that yet. How do you continue to reframe how we understand God, say those things, say that God is good, say all, you know, mm-hmm. all the things about God, and at the same time, still give it somewhat of a, just help us see it in a fresh picture?
Well, I guess on some level, the language of culture is always sort of evolving. Mm-hmm. And so the way we express ourselves, the way people talked 20 years ago is different than how people talk now. The words that we use on some degree. And so so some of that's just a natural progression of language. But I when I'm writing songs as a expression of worship to the Lord, I'm not really thinking about showing God in a new way to people. Mm-hmm. I'm really just thinking of expressing my heart to the Lord, and sometimes that comes out in a way that doesn't feel new at all, but that's okay. And sometimes it does. I think to me more, it's just about being honest with what I'm bringing to God instead of being overly concerned about whether something's fresh or new. There are words that should never lose their potency. Mm-hmm. the holiness of God is telling, expressing to God that He is holy. We don't need a new way to say that. It should never lose its potency. And so I think on some level, I look then for music or melodies to help me sing a word that maybe isn't new, but to sing it in a way that helps me re-engage with that word. Mm-hmm. So I usually then I'm looking more at how can I melodically make this interesting.
That's a great way to say that. It's funny when you take certain songs and you kind of keep reworking them and reworking, and then you do realize how, oh, I said mercy this way, but then if I use this note instead, all of a sudden it's like, wow, that suddenly makes you really want to sing that.
Totally. And
I remember Chad Segura, I was sitting down with him one time on the podcast, and he said about how he's like, you know, we have to be able to write songs that are both clever and compelling.
Yeah.
You know, and just trying to go from that space of like, well, that's different than writing something that's smart and intelligent. And it's like, oh, wow, I get it.
Right. Yeah. That's versus, really good.
Versus I really want to sing this song. I really want to make it my own.
Right. Right.
So you both write for other people, and then you also have your own band. You lead worship as well. Mm-hmm. How is it different for you singing your own songs that you've written compared to, say, grabbing a song that somebody else has done when you're leading worship yourself?
Well, what's fun these days is because I've been around for some amount of time now, and I've got really rich friendships with so many people that contribute songs to the church, capital C, around the world. And so when I'm singing 10,000 Reasons, I'm not a writer, but I have such fond memories of life that I've done with Matt Redman and with Jonas Myron, that like, it feels like, so I'm thinking about how special that friendship is when I'm singing that song, or if I'm leading What a Beautiful Name. I've done a lot of life with Ben Fielding, and so I'm thinking about how much our past and our friendship. And so leading songs that aren't mine, I know that's not a normal experience, but for me, it feels very rich to lead songs that my friends have written, and knowing them and knowing their heart. And then leading songs that I've written, it doesn't feel a whole lot different when a song goes on and becomes like some songs, and the ones that I'm most amazed by are when they stop becoming my song and they become everyone's song. Mm-hmm. And then when I lead that song, I don't think my experience is really different than anyone else's. I don't feel like it's my song. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm just leading a song that I might have the song story for it, but I just feel like I'm leading someone else's song. Mm-hmm. In a way that feels really special.
That's amazing. So basically, as long as we know Matt Redman personally, we're gonna get a lot out of that song.
Totally, I know that's not fair, but.
Well, what does inspire you musically? You know, like you were saying, how when you take a song and a word that matters, and you frame it in a way that musically and melodically grabs onto that. You know, who do you find really inspiring? Like, where do you find that musical inspiration?
I find it from the sound of a congregation. So I'm not so, when I'm writing and leaning into writing a worship song, like I'm not so much, I mean, I love worship music. And so I'm definitely a digester of so much music out there. But I'm most motivated by the sound of God's people singing. And so I will place myself in my head in times where I remember what that sounds like or what that feels like to hear God's people singing praise to Him. And that's really what, when I'm wanting to write something for that kind of context, I'm very mindful of that.
So you actually imagining it, like when you've got a song and you're like, okay, I think I've got this. Yeah. I'm going to go introduce this, or somebody else is. Are you imagining, like, okay, how are people going to respond? Yeah. How are they going to react? What's it going to sound like when we all do it together?
Yeah, I do the whole role play in my mind thing, and I'll picture being in front of a group of people and singing that song and imagine what it sounds like for them to sing it with me. And sometimes in that actually really helps me, like, cater a melody to a more friendly space for a group. Or I'm definitely picturing that moment when I'm writing, and it helps me write those kinds of songs in a way that I think is more useful in a congregational setting.
So have you ever had one that you're like, all right, it's going to be like this, and then you go out and you introduce it, and the response is completely different than what you expected?
Yeah, definitely. And so that's where you have to just kind of, I mean, I think as songwriters, every songwriter should know that when I'm working on a song, like, and when you're working on a song, we should be feeling like this is the best song ever.
You know? I totally feel that way for 5 minutes.
Yeah. And then sometimes you come back like a day later and you're like, no, or you come back after lunch. But sometimes you're still feeling that way when you go to lead it, and it just doesn't connect. And we just have to trust that process, that it's okay. And sometimes it takes two or three times with a song with a group of people before they know it and can really own it. But we need to be careful not to just shove what we think's awesome down people's throats. If it doesn't become their song.
Do you ever take it, like, go back and rework something that, like, what, like, do you kind of look at it and go, okay, now I've done this, and so I've put it out there? Because I'm very fortunate, like, I have a small congregation, and, like, yeah. I introduced a song a couple weeks ago, and I got done with it, and I was like, man, I can beat that second verse. I can totally beat it. I don't think anybody knows it well enough that I can come back again and try to get, give it another shot. Do you ever rework those things? Or do you just kind of go, all right, let's move past it?
That's such a gift that you have that. In this season, I don't have that. And I wish I did. It's very valuable to be able to lead a song and then go back and go, everything worked great except for this section, or we rehearsed it with the band and everything felt great except for this section. In this season for me, most often I'm working on something and it's done and recorded before we know if it's going to work. Mm-hmm. And so then we don't really get to go back. But I've watched a friend, I've watched other friends do that quite a bit. And I think that's pretty valuable. I've worked on songs with Brian Johnson, and he has no problem leading a song 3 weeks in a row, and every week it's entirely different than it was the week before, which is awesome.
Yeah, it's having that gracious congregation, right? That can exactly. Kind of go with you, I always wonder. I'm like, because I don't record music and I just teach it at church and then like do that. It's funny because every once in a while I'll go back and then I'll be like, oh, you know what? Tried to record a little demo of this thing, and I just don't like where this melody note goes. Like, I'm going to go back and next time I'm just going to take that out. I'm sure nobody will notice. And then you hear the whole congregation go one way and you're like, whoop. Oh, first of all, cool. You guys do know this song. But I guess we'll go back to that one again. I get that way on hymns too. A lot of times, I'll hear a version of a song, like, oh, cool. That's how that song goes. And then I'll go in and I'll find out that is not the melody to that hymn. It's like, all right, now you guys are leading me. We're going all around.
Yeah, that's a sacred space, the melody of a hymn. And I find myself, I'm actually leading some this weekend where I've got to lead two hymns. And I'm like really working hard to learn them, because the way I might just sing them naturally is missing some of the some of the stuff that I know they're going to sing. So, and there's way more chords than I'm able to play. So I always have to work that around too.
Right. Just strip them down. have you ever had a song that you've kind of tossed away and been like, I'm kind of done with this thing, and then had it come back around and either connect with somebody else's, you know, congregation or connect with another artist? Have you had those that you've kind of let go of and had them come back?
Yeah, a few times. One that comes to mind when you're asking me that right now is because sometimes we think of songs for a certain season or moment, but God's got it for a different one that we can't see or we don't know. I wrote a song called Here's My Heart with Chris Tomlin and Louis Giglio for a Passion conference. And I was super excited about it. And I thought it was going to go over great. And then for whatever reason, it didn't seem right for them to do for that conference. And so it sat for a whole year. And I thought everyone had forgotten about the song. And I had just moved on. And then a year later, during the Passion conference, Crowder started singing a new song. And it was that song, Here's My Heart. And it was so obvious that it was meant for him to sing. And it was meant for that year. But if I had had my way, it would have been done a year earlier by a different artist. And so I've definitely had that happen a couple times. How Can It Be was that way as well. We'd written it probably a year before Lauren Daigle heard it. And it was sitting on my computer and I almost completely forgot about it because the artist we worked on it with, didn't end up being the right fit. And I thought maybe that song was well over and that no one would ever hear it. And just on a little nudge one day, I sent it to a friend of mine, Paul Mabry, and he had Lauren over at the time, who was a brand new artist that no one had ever heard of. And he played it for her. She sang a quick vocal over the piano from my demo. And that's the vocal that ended up being on the radio. But it easily could have never been heard, you know? And so I always wonder, you know, even now, what might come, what God might bring back from the past that is out there. You know, one of the most amazing stories in that regard, I don't want to crush your podcast.
Oh no, man, keep it going. I got a whole list of songs I'm going to ask you about. So just, you already hit Here's My Heart. That was already on there. So let's keep going.
Good. Well, another one that happened for is Even So Come. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine named Jess Cates had lived in LA for quite a long time and was quite a successful writer in the pop world there, but leading at a church in the LA area, leading worship, and their church was going through a season of fasting, and so they were fasting for 30 days, and he thought he was going to write a whole bunch of songs during that season, and he wasn't able to write anything, nothing, just had no luck.
It's weird when you don't have any nutrition. So they're all super hangry songs.
So he, at the end of the 30 days, though, he wrote a lot of what became Even So Come. And they were and started leading it at his church. And it became a real, like, a song that brought a lot of revival to their church. 10 years passed. And he hadn't led that song in 10 years. And I was going to write some with Chris. And Chris asked me if there was anyone I thought might be good to join us for one of the days. And I had this nudge from the Lord, because Chris and Jess had never met, that Jess would be a good person to have join us. And so Chris agreed to do that. And so I, Jess came and joined Chris and I, and Jess said, hey, weirdest thing, I had this nudge to bring you guys this song that I wrote and led in LA a decade ago. And I haven't thought about it since, but I just felt like the Lord wanted me to bring it to you guys. And so he did. And then we reworked it, rewrote some of it. And it became a real special song for a lot of people coming out of that Passion Conference where Chris introduced it. But that's one of those amazing stories where I think we're always so looking for the new thing, the next thing. We're always moving forward, and we all move so fast that we don't maybe stop to think about what God might use that is something that he gave us 10 years ago. And yeah. So it's pretty amazing.
Well, it's amazing how often he kind of slows us down and is like, maybe don't rush on yet.
Yeah.
Maybe just... He tends to take longer to do things.
Totally. That's so good.
All right. So I was wondering if I could run down just a few songs that are on our website.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, you've written like half our website. So that's pretty cool. But I wanted to just grab some of my favorites out here. Tell me about Great Are You, Lord. Mm. Because the first time I heard that song, I think I had actually just talked with you is when I had done like my original interview with you like years ago. Yeah. And then I was with David Leonard and he's like, oh, dude, you got to check out this song. And he put it on. And I'm sitting in his office and I'm like almost in tears listening to this song. It was really, really powerful. And that song is so simple.
Yeah.
It's so simple, but it's so powerful. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, well,
if you could put it in a 5 steps of how to do that, that'd be great. But
David and Leslie and I got together. I mean, I think maybe one of the gifts of it was we got together to write a song for Journey Church which is just a little congregation here in Franklin, Tennessee. And David and Leslie were on staff, and David said, it's a very sort of contemplative space there, really beautiful, but people don't really, there's a lot of, people aren't like forced to just like stand and sing and raise their hands. Like there's a lot of like, during the worship time, you could kneel, you could pray, you could sit, you could go visit different stations, and which is really beautiful. But because of that, the culture there, there wasn't actually the singing time wasn't as like people didn't bring the singing as much as David was praying. They could and would. And so he said, I'd really like to write a song that would just help Journey Church sort of lean into worship a bit more than we have been. And when we would lead it, that people would just stand up and sing. And so, we tried to write a simple song that our church could lean into and engage and sing loud. And so I've always loved, the first person I ever heard say, there's nothing like the people of God and the presence of God pouring out the praises of God is Redman. And I always thought there is nothing like that. So how do we write a song that helps people just contextualize that that's what we're doing for the people of God and the presence of God pouring out his praise. And in a similar time frame, I heard Louis Giglio say that in some sense, when we worship God, we're giving his breath back to him. And so we just kind of took a couple of these thoughts and put them in a song. And that song's been really funny because it's like had 3 or 4 lifetimes now, and it just has continued to grow and take on a new life. And I sing it now, and it's like I'm singing a new song. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's something that happens sometimes with worship music, and the songs are very ordinary. But when the people of God sing them, it's like taking a song that was just a melody and words, just very ordinary, and plugging them into a light socket. And so the power, the electricity that's on them wasn't actually on the song the day we wrote it, mm-hmm. but God's people put the electricity in that song. And as it becomes a song for the church around the world to sing to God. And so now it's a whole different thing than the day we wrote it. But at the same time, you heard it probably before anyone outside of our little circle had heard it. And even then, like, it felt very special, but we didn't know what it was going to become.
Yeah. Well, it's become quite the song. I was actually talking to a worship leader buddy and the other day, and he's asking about some song, and he goes, everyone's just like asking us to like, when's the next Great Are You Lord? When's that one coming? Like, I don't know, man. We're just got to see. You know? Right. Lamb of God. I think you wrote that. There's Vertical Church, right?
Yeah.
That song, you know, I got to hear Meredith sing it. And and it, like, she was just sitting there like belting it out in our studio, and I was like, we need to go find this song. Like, where is it? How do we get it? What, you know? Can you tell me about that song? Because the imagery in it is so rich. And it says all the, it's another one of those songs that I feel like really kind of grabs you and it gives you something to sing while at the same time, you know, still creating this like beautiful picture.
Yeah. We were in Chicago writing for Vertical Church Band. They're going by Vertical Worship now. I was in my hotel room the morning that we, Meredith and Andy and I wrote that. And I just really felt moved to write a song that would, my desire was that, like, if anyone were to sing this song, they couldn't help but show God's love to people around them. And so, which was kind of a weird way to start a worship song, but I had seen some Christians treating some people in a way that I didn't feel like was very honoring of the Lord, and I thought, I want to write a song that if they were to sing this song, they couldn't help but show God's love to people. And so that was the unusual, weird sort of like starting place in my mind. And I just wanted to be so overwhelmed by what God had so undeservedly done for me and for us that that when we just live in that awareness that it would affect how we treat everyone around us. And so the picture was just the Lamb of God in my place, and that it was my death he died. So that's where that came from. And it's interesting how in worship, it seems in the church, it seems like there are things that are on God's heart that will often sort of like, you'll hear a certain, like God's like, revealing himself in a certain way for a season, mm-hmm. and that maybe we've gotten too far away from the Jesus as the sacrificial lamb. And so then there was this season where I was starting to sing the lamb, about the lamb, mm-hmm. of God, and God being a lamb in multiple places. And then there's been this other season now where it's like back to the father's heart and singing about God being a father. But when these things happen, it's not usually just one song that carries a theme. It's like God's actively involved in the writers, the psalmist of today, to say let's rebring awareness back to this part of who I am. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. You know, you talk about being moved, and you know, one of the like, kind of threads that I hear through a lot of these stories is well, this is kind of what was God was doing in me at the time. And I think that's such a key thing for us to go back to, because I know in my own life I had been in a season of just, you know, working on the website, working at church, two little kids, and you just get in these seasons where you're busy, and you're not filling your well to have anything to really pull out of it, you know. And God is really gracious in those times. But I find that when I'm finding time now to get back in that habit of, you know, you talk about, oh, well, this is a season of this. And it's like, well, that season becomes a habit. And then all of a sudden 10 years goes by and you're like, oh, I haven't opened my Bible in 10 years. All right. Right. Should probably get back on that. How do you continue, you know, I'm sure you're busy. You're writing with all these different people. How do you continue to fill that well for yourself?
I mean, a lot of it for me is in my relationships and reading. I love to read, and I don't get to read. I don't read as much as I want to, but I do try to always be reading something. And there are days when life and parenting and everything and work responsibilities keeps me from that, but I'm always trying to be reading something. And then just friendships and relationships where we sort of dig in deep life together. So those are the places where I stay inspired. I love people's stories. I think that, you know, the Bible says that we'll overcome by the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony. So I just find the testimony of people that have walked in the faith. Like, to me, I want to know those stories. So the book I actually just finished this week is Stephen Curtis Chapman's autobiography called Between the Heaven and the Real World. And my cup is so full from reading his story. I'm super inspired right now from hearing about his journey and how God has been faithful in his life. And so I'm probably my favorite things to read are people's stories. Mm-hmm.
So what are you inspired by right now? So, you know, you say people's stories in terms of your work, in terms of your projects and what you're working on, kind of looking at this next season of your life. What's got you the most amped? What are you excited about?
Usually pretty just focused on what is in front of me at the moment. And so what I'm most excited about is always sort of what I'm into at the moment. So it's constantly different. Right at this moment, Paul and I are producing an album for Corey Asbury, who is on the Bethel, who's part of the Bethel team. And so we're doing a project for them and with Corey. And I'm really moved by some of the songs he's got on here and the way that he approaches leading worship. And so that's what I'm working on today and tomorrow and yesterday. And so it's got my full attention, and I'm super excited to see what God does with what Corey has. And coming up, you know, I think I'm at a place in life where I'm just always asking God, like, I don't want to just write something that we had some time of prayer, some friends and I who write songs for the church. And one of the people that were there was there as Mia Fields. And I think it was her that said it. But she said something that has really been my prayer ever since that conversation, which is, I don't want to just write the next song, but I want to write a new song. Mm-hmm. And so I don't want to just be so in the habit of what I do that it's just the next song and the next song and the next song, but I want to bring God a new song. He asked for those. So sing to the Lord a new song. So I want to write a new song, but I don't want it to just be the next song. And so the pace might be slower. I'm just sort of waiting on the Lord for those. But that's really the prayer of my heart at the moment, is not to just, God doesn't need more songs. I think we've kind of gotten a little inundated with such an insane amount of songs and music that's being made in the church these days, that for me, I want to pause and just say, Lord, what's the new song you want me to write, and when do you want me to write it? Because it may not be today or tomorrow or next week, and just sort of waiting on Him for those.
Beautiful. I was like making notes on that one. Let me ask you one more question. We can always take it out if it's not the greatest. So we just released the song. Just released the song "So Will I" 100 billion times, right? The new Hillsong United record. And I love what they're doing with that record. Like, I love the beauty of it and kind of this little more abstractness about it. You know, at the same time, I'm watching people struggle. I wrote a little post about it. I was like, hey, before we launch this, let's talk about the lyrics. Let's talk about, does it work in a congregational context? Is it meant for that, or is it meant for something else? And for some people it's going to be, some people it's not. And that the main reason was building around, I saw a couple arguments happening. One was around, they use that term evolve, right? So he was talking about, when you speak, 100 billion creatures catch your breath, evolving in pursuit of what you said. And so that word was like a real trigger for a lot of people of like, I can't do that. Why would they say that? They messed up. And I'm like, I don't think they messed up. I think they probably wanted to talk about it, would be my guess. And then the other thing is just kind of, it brings up the other conversation of metaphor versus saying something really blatantly, right? Like just kind of saying like, and in congregational music, in order for us to all be able to grab onto something and be able to sing it wholeheartedly, I feel like it's important that we understand what we're singing. So I guess I don't know, I'm assuming you've probably heard that song, maybe not. But I'd love to just your thoughts on that, on taking songs to a place where they're a little bit more abstract. Is there a place for that? And what is that place, in your opinion?
Well, I think what I would say first is that song for me really humbled me. I had listened to bits and pieces of it, but it was honestly only 3 or 4 weeks ago that I sat down and just listened to the song. Mm-hmm. And because we're in a culture where it's like, I'm just going to sample a 90 seconds and go, I love it, and move on. But I listened to that song beginning to end, and I was really humbled and felt like really inspired to not settle on what I'm bringing the Lord. Mm-hmm. And that song to me sounds like people who worked really, really, really hard and long to say something really special. And in the culture here in Nashville, so often it's a speed game, and people expect to write songs quickly. And so I listened to that and thought, I don't want, with whatever songs God has in my future, they might be simple, but they're not going to be simple just because I was moving quick. Like I was really inspired to work harder at my craft. Mm-hmm. After hearing that song. And so that's what that song has done for me. The metaphors I think are beautiful. When I heard that song, I didn't hear something that I would tend to lead congregationally. Mm-hmm. So I haven't really analyzed it in that setting. I know in some places it would work, but it's a lot to take, to lead that congregationally is pretty big buy-in, you know?
Well, it's a lot to take in, right? Like there's like so much, it's so dense. You know,
I don't really hear it that way. I don't listen to that song and hear a song, and I could be end up being so reading this so wrong, but I don't hear a song that's going to be sung on Sunday mornings all around the world. I hear a song that is completely leveling people that listen to it and just like opening our hearts wide to God's love and what He's done for us. And so, so it causes me to worship, but not in the limited sense of the 3.5 minutes on a Sunday morning between "This is Amazing Grace" and "How Great is Our God." So in that sense, I think the metaphors are really beautiful. I mean, the Bible's full of metaphors. From the psalmist used a lot of metaphors, and Jesus used a lot of metaphors. So I think metaphors often help us sort of like, a word that Hillsong was United was using on the record, but it helps us sort of like find a little bit more wonder about these things that might otherwise have start to feel a little, we take them for granted, mm-hmm. So I don't know if that was an answer to your question.
No, that's a great answer. I think, I've kind of been in that same spot of lately, especially I find myself more and more, looking for worship music that maybe isn't congregational, but still really inspires me to worship, and I think that as worship pastors, especially when we're in that zone of, okay, we've got to go do this thing and we're going to like, what's the next one? What's the next song I can use? I'm going to rip through these and okay, I can use that one. And we get kind of in that space rather than in the space of, like you're saying, of being in wonder at God and being in, I was just listening to Paul Balazs was on a little bit ago, and he was talking about David's album Labyrinth. And I'm like, sure, yeah, I'll go check that out. And now I'm like, oh, I just want to sit with this record. I just want to sit and just listen to it and get to have that worship experience on my own, and that becomes one of those areas that fills me up. And I think that song, it kind of falls in that, it's in that same space. And I think we do need those songs that maybe that we don't go, okay, we're going to go do this on Sunday, but that we still go, man, let's sit with that one for a while, and really wrestle through it. So.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Well, Jason, thank you so much for taking the time. I have, since I met you years ago, I've always been like, that was the grace. I think there's one point in time where you're like, how's this going? And I was like, am I gazing too lovingly into your eyes? Like you really have a beautiful heart. And I think it's important for the entire church, like you were saying, capital C, to know that the people that are writing songs for us have the heart that you do and that it matches the heart that we have. And so, thank you so much for sharing your heart with us. It was awesome to have you.
Such a pleasure. Thanks for taking the time.
Man, what a guy. I love Leading Forever Rain. I think it's one of my all-time favorite songs. And playing with him and that when he played that song, it just felt like, just when he sings it, you can tell that he means every word. And it really is refreshing to know that the people that are writing these songs, even Matt Redman, all those guys, there's people with real story and real heart and living what they're singing about.
Yeah, he's outstanding. I love interviewing him. I hope we get to have him back again sometime. If you want to learn any of his songs, such as "Great Are You, Lord," "Forever Reign," "Because He Lives," "Here's My Heart," "Never Once," "Lamb of God," "King of Heaven," I can keep going. You can go learn those over at worshiprsu.com. You can sign up for a free account and learn any of those songs and learn them in a way that your 5-piece band can play them. Or if you want to just play them by yourself, you can do that too. But we're going to shut it down for this week. Jason, thanks so much for being with us. Daniel, thank you. And we'll see you next week.